All right, we're talking to Bob Scott, who was with WTMA back in the 60s. Bob, when exactly were you with the Big 1250?
I started at WTMA, I believe it was in 61, and I was with them probably until 67 or 68, I'm not sure. At the same time that I was working at WTMA, I was also in the Air Force.
Okay.
I was stationed at the Air Force Base in Charleston.
Now, what brought you to WTMA? Just the military, or did you have any radio experience before?
Yes, I attended William & Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia, and the college had their own radio station, and that's where I first got involved in broadcasting. And then I worked in Norfolk, Virginia, two different stations in Norfolk, and then when I joined the Air Force and came to Charleston, then that's when I joined up with TMA.
What was WTMA like when you got there? Who were some of the other jocks that happened to be there at the very first in 1961?
Doug Randall was there.
Was he the program director?
The program director at the time that I was hired was, I believe, Bob Mitchell.
Okay.
And then after Bob Mitchell left, Doug Randall was the acting program director, and I can't remember who replaced Doug. Terry Allen was a DJ, and of course, Jim Diamond, myself, Bob Scott, Charlie Lindsay was there. And there were some other ones that were there, but they were there a short period of time, and I really can't remember their names.
What shift did you work at WTMA when you got here?
I worked from 9 till 12, 4 to 6. Worked weekends. I remember that I used to sign off Saturday night at midnight, and I would sleep on a sofa at WTMA and sign on 6 o'clock Sunday morning.
Wow.
It was much more convenient doing that than driving all the way back to the Air Force Base and then getting up and getting back to the station in time to go on the air.
Who was the general manager at the time? Was that Chuck Smith?
Chuck Smith.
And how was he to work for?
I really didn't have that much communication with Chuck, but what communication I did have, very nice gentleman, never had any problems or disagreements or no problems at all.
Doing two jobs, being in the military, being in the Air Force, and then being on WTMA, there must have been a big showbiz aspect of being a disc jockey on the air and then going back to like a regular military job.
When I started at WTMA, the base commander somehow found out that one of his airmen stationed on the base was a radio personality.
Because you weren't using your real name on the air, right?
No. My real name is Bob Hogan.
Okay.
When he found out that there was a radio personality at the base, he got a hold of my commander, and he said, whatever arrangements you need to make to accommodate this airman working with WTMA.
Wow.
As the situation was, I was an electronic aircraft technician, and that was a 24/7 job, and we rotated shifts, and, you know, it was 7 days, 24 hours a day, you know, we were on standby or on call. And they just changed my schedule at the Air Force Base, and whenever I had to work at TMA on the weekends, whatever, I was made available to be able to work at the station. Now, this caused problems with the other airmen because they were showing me preferential treatment because I didn't work weekends, you know, and so on and so forth. So I went to my commander and said, you know, we got a problem. You know, I don't know whether you heard about it or not, but, you know, the other airmen are kind of upset. And he said, yes. He says, I've heard about it. He says, I don't even know exactly what to do about it. And I said, well, I've got a couple ideas. So I went back to the station, and I explained the situation to Bob Mitchell. And he said, let me get as many demos as I can that we don't need here at the station. You take them back to the Air Force Base and pass them out to the airmen. See what that does. It worked like $1 million.
And demos, you mean?
45 RPM records.
Oh, okay, free records.
I gave them free records, and they were satisfied. Payola.
There you go.
I think Bob referred to it as military payola.
All right, you were at WTMA part of the time. You were working in the Air Force. Which job was more fun?
Oh, definitely TMA.
And why was that?
Well, I enjoyed the work. I enjoyed being in broadcasting. I did the Saturday Night All Request Show where people would call in and make requests and dedications and so on and so forth, and I really enjoyed that. The personal contact with the listening audience.
Once you got off the air, did you come across people who knew you from the air or discovered who you were, and all of a sudden their eyes would light up and they'd be really excited that you're Bob Scott from TMA?
In a few cases, that was true, yes.
Because being on the radio was really special back then. You were like a local celebrity, right?
Yes, yes. I think we were in radio the best time we could have been because we were right on the tail end of personality radio. In other words, we could develop our own personality. I had the Bob Scott Show. I was Bob Scott. I could develop my own air personality, and that's almost gone today, and it's a shame.
What was your favorite thing about the job at TMA?
Well, I certainly enjoyed the music I played. I liked the top 40 music. I had almost complete control of what I played and when I played it.
Oh, that's cool.
They tried to put in a playlist, and I believe some jocks had to go by it, but I had a talk with Bob Mitchell, and I said, this isn't going to work for me. And he says, well, let's try it your way and see what happens. And the playlist indicated one thing, but what went over the air was something different.
Why didn't it work for you? You just didn't like to conform to the rules, or perhaps you thought that the playlist didn't represent your listening audience?
The playlist, it wasn't necessarily the selections as much as it was the order of the music. First of all, I would start the show with a high beat record, okay? Well, sometimes the playlist started me off with Johnny Mathis singing Misty. That just didn't get it with me.
So you played the music that was on the playlist, but you just adjusted the order for it and compensated.
Somewhat. And in some cases, I played music that wasn't on the playlist.
Okay. But your ratings must have been good for them to let you do that.
Ratings were very good. When I was on the air, I believe that according to Hooper, Pulse, and Trendex, I had more listeners than all the other stations in the area combined.
Wow.
And they did allow me to, you know, pretty much do my own thing.
All right, what's the thing that you liked least about TMA? Was there something about the radio station that, or something you had to do with the radio station that you didn't
care for?
Well,
there was a guy there by the name of Jim Diamond. What did I like least?
Did you have to do production, commercials,
yes,
and things like that?
Yes, did commercials, production.
Doing the news on the air?
I did news. The Saturday Night Show was a one-man band. I mean, I was the only one in the studio. So I did the news, you know, the whole nine yards. I don't know what I would say would be what I disliked the most. I really don't know.
We have two air checks of you on the website.
I hate the North 52 drive.
We have two air checks that you sent us besides what was already on the website.
Okay.
And one of them has you as Bob Scott, and then the other one has you as Steve Canyon. What was the deal there with two air names?
The station owner called me into the office one day, and he says, Scott, he says, we got a problem. He said, and why he picked me, I don't know. But nevertheless, he called me, and he says, we got a problem. He says, there's a strong rumor going around that I believe has some truth to it, that WQSN, which was also top 40 at the time, was bringing in this hot shot DJ by the name of Steve Canyon. Now, back at the time I worked at WTMA, the only competition we felt we had was QSN. So what Chuck wanted to do was beat him to the punch and have TMA have their own Steve Canyon. So basically what I did was develop two different air personalities. And if you listen to the Bob Scott air check and you listen to the Steve Canyon air check, you'll probably be able to detect it might be the same person, but it certainly is two different approaches. Bob Scott was a screamer, and Steve Canyon was more laid back, more mature approach. There were days that I would do Bob Scott and Steve Canyon split shift.
Oh, wow.
And one of the tricks I used to use, I don't know if you ever saw it or not, but you know the window we had between the production room and the control room? I used to stick the name up there, Bob Scott and Steve Canyon, so I would remember who I am.
I guess you'd have to. So why did you leave TMA?
There was several reasons I left TMA. There was some personal reasons that I felt it was best that I leave Charleston and go back to my home, which was in Virginia. I had an opportunity to get a job at General Electric in a quality engineering function, which was a good move for me.
A real job. A
career field. That's really the secondary reason. The primary reason is that, and I wish I could remember the gentleman's name, Chuck Smith hired this gentleman as a, I don't know the proper word to use. Chuck owned WTMA in Charleston, and he also owns a station in Jacksonville. And I don't know whether this gentleman was hired as manager for the Jacksonville station. He seemed to be in between both stations. And this gentleman, as far as I can understand, was a real con artist. And somehow he put Chuck Smith in a position where Chuck was financially strapped, and there was a rumor going around that TMA was up for sale.
Wow.
And between that and having some desire to return to the old homeland back in Virginia, that's why I left TMA.
Did you ever work in radio again?
I worked for QSN, and I can't remember that there was a transition. I worked for TMA and QSN and then back to TMA, and I can't remember the details of that. After I left Charleston, I never worked in radio again.
How come?
Probably the job that I had at General Electric, and I worked for them for 11 years before they shut down the operation and moved it offshore. I got used to working regular hours. I enjoyed my weekends off. Even though I didn't heavily search for any opportunities in broadcasting, none came my way.
Did you ever feel that you wanted to get back into radio? With a lot of people, they say that many times, once you do radio, it's in your blood forever.
It's in your blood many times. But I would never today consider going back into radio because personality radio was my game.
So you're living in Florida now?
Yes, Fort Lauderdale.
Did you retire there?
Yes.
Did you do something after GE?
Yes, I was in manufacturing. When I relocated to Fort Lauderdale, I went back into manufacturing career as a quality engineer, and I retired as a quality engineer.
Let's go back to TMA. Any promotions or contests that you remember doing while you were on the air there that stand
name
out?
Name it and claim it. You remember that?
RC Cola was the sponsor, right?
RC Cola was big. Well, we gave away, as prizes, we gave away transistor radios, and I don't remember how they did it, what the mechanism was, but the only station that would play on it was WTMA. And then the reality of the situation was, well, they would have been on TMA anyway.
Anybody at TMA you were particularly close to on the air or off the air?
I was very close to one lady off the air that I actually visited several times, and I attempted to contact her this time, and I have a feeling that she has passed away based on the inputs that I've got.
What's her name?
Her name was Viola Taylor, and Viola used to call, and she loved Elvis Presley. And on Saturday nights, I would play Elvis Presley and dedicate it to Viola Taylor, and she thought that was the greatest thing since rap candy, and she invited me out to her house several times for her children's birthday parties and things like that, and I became very, very close to the lady.
When you were at WTMA, did you do a lot of promotional appearances, remotes and things like that?
Not a lot. Well, you know about the North 52 drive-in, which I think is the worst air check I've ever ever made.
Well, tell us about the North 52 drive-in.
Oh, no, I don't know what to do. I didn't like it. I guess for whatever reason, I didn't fight it. I wasn't going to tell him I wasn't going to do it, but it just went against my grain doing that.
What exactly did you do? Besides do broadcast, you emceed a contest or something?
Yeah. I can't remember what all was involved. I think we had silly little contests and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the other remotes that I did was from Somerville football games. A gentleman by the name of Bill Hallman did the play-by-play, and I did the commercial work.
On Somerville football games?
Somerville football games.
Which I guess you could hear on WTMA FM.
I think the entire time I was at WTMA, it was simulcast. The same thing that was on AM was on FM.
Mm-hmm.
The nasty side of me was that we had an engineer by the name of Harold Kramer, and I used to tease poor Harold so bad. Harold Kramer was the station engineer. Very meek, very quiet. He would come in the control room and you wouldn't even know it, you know, spoke very, very low. And you throw the mic key to the left, the mic is not hot, but the monitor speaker goes off. And behind us, we had a Magnacore reel-to-reel tape machine. Well, this particular time, I did it like maybe two or three times, and all three times he almost had a heart attack. You know, he didn't get it the first time around. The first time he was working on this Magnacore reel-to-reel machine, and the music started fading out, and I flipped the switch. I didn't go to dead air, but I flipped the switch to the left, and I said, "There, that should hold you, little son of a for a while." Tape fell off the Magnacore, rolled all over the floor. I thought that Harold was going to have a heart attack. And thank God I threw the switch the right way. And then the other trick I played on Harold, which was bad, we had this little remote. I think I had two pots on it, and he was in this room outside of the control room, the production room, and off of where the records were kept. And he was sitting there, and he had this little remote station that we use for the football games. And he had his headsets on, and he was sitting there. Hello, test. 1, 2, 3. Hello, test. I snuck up behind him, and I said, "What are you doing, Harold?" And the headsets fly out. I was a real bad teaser, and I think a lot of that still stays with me.
How about outside of radio? Did you ever do any audio work?
You're talking about James Brown. We went, and I wanted to tape a show. We put the mics out there. I'm sure we had some kind of a conversation to have the okay to do it. You know, we certainly didn't do it without permission. But it was one particular song that they didn't want recorded. So one of his crew turned the mics around facing the audience rather than facing the performers so that we wouldn't pick up on that particular song. I don't remember exactly how it came about. I've lived in Fort Lauderdale for 30-some years, and I had no desire to go back into radio because personality radio was basically dead. But somehow, some way, a recording studio in Miami by the name of Criterion contacted me. I don't know how they got my name or how it came about, but they contacted me and they said, "You were in broadcasting, correct? And, you know, you played with controls and consoles and tape recorders and all that." And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, we're looking for somebody to lay tracks." Well, at the time, I didn't even know what laying tracks meant. So they set me up with an interview, and I went down there. And what they wanted was for someone to be there to record people at particular times, mostly like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I did it for a while, and then I said, "This is ridiculous. These hours are too much, you know." And I was doing this plus doing a full-time job during the daytime. So needless to say, my sleeping hours were greatly reduced. But when I said laying tracks, what would happen was is that artists would come to town and they would do a show. Bonnie Pointer, I can remember, was one of them. And after the show was over, you would think that they would be totally exhausted and the last thing that they'd want to do is do any more performing. Actually, that's when they wanted to record because they're hot, they're hip, and they're still ready to go and they're not tired. So I was going to Criterion Recording Studios 2-3 o'clock in the morning after these concerts were over and producing and recording tracks for some of these artists that did concerts in Fort Lauderdale. I became very good friends with all the Bee Gees when they were alive. The Bee Gees lived in Miami, did a lot of work with the Bee Gees at Criterion. Casey and the Sunshine Band, which they lived in Hialeah, but I had to work with them. And then there was an incident one time that this you probably don't know, and I don't think anybody ever found out, because if they did, they may have fired me at TMA. I was on the air on a Sunday, and of course, you're the only one there, and the light kept blinking. Door, you know, someone was pushing the doorbell. You know who it was? Drunk out of his mind. And I should have had better sense, but I let it in. Clyde McFadden. And I had no idea when I first looked at him that he was Clyde McFadden. But as he started talking, and, you know, he was the lead singer for the Drifters before they split. Well, I let him in. I let him upstairs, and I let him in the control room. And the good Lord must have been looking out for me because he said a few words. You know, I said, we're privileged to have Clyde McFadden here. And he said a few words on the air, and I was able to get him out of the control room and put him back out on the street.
What do you think WTMA meant to Charleston in the 60s when you were there?
I believe the WTMA was listened to by just about everybody, especially the teenagers. You'd go to the beach. You go to Isle of Palms Beach. You go to Folly Beach. You go to all these different places, and every place you went, TMA was on the air. It was just the station that everybody listened to, and I don't think it was just the teenagers and the kids, but the adults too.